debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The rally tolls are stacking up in Tulsa. Herman Cain died. Many people got sick. In Minnesota, at least three rallies by Trump and Pence have led to explosions, to clusters of COVID infections. In Omaha, 30 people needed medical attention because they were left out in the freezing cold. In Tampa, dozens of people went to the hospital for medical attention due to the heat. It's getting bizarre out there. Tuesday is Election Day. More people have now voted in Hawaii and Texas than in the entire 2016 election. I've been saying this for several days now, but if you have not voted yet, if you have not mailed in your ballot, it is too late to mail in your ballot. In fact, in Pennsylvania in particular, at the start of the year, only 7% of first-class mail in the state of Pennsylvania, actually, only 7% of mail failed to meet this five-day standard of taking 5 days to deliver mail, maximum. This is from PennLive.com. It's one of the local newspapers in Pennsylvania. In Philadelphia, 42% of all first-class mail is taking longer than 5 days to deliver. 42%. It was 7% at the beginning of the year. This is, you know, Louis DeJoy and Donald Trump trying to kneecap the post office so that your vote won't be counted. So if you're planning on voting, take it in physically. Take your ballot in. If you got a mail-in ballot, take it. Do not trust anything to the mail right now. Margie in Millerstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Margie, what's up?
Hey, I was watching the Trump rally in Florida, and he had them all round up. Melania spoke today, so he's on cloud nine, and he's peppier than ever. Of course, the Antifa came up, as it always does at his rallies. He actually compared, they all screamed and carried on about Antifa, and he said, no, and Joe Biden just says they're an idea. Then he said, come to think of it, the United States is just an idea. And then they all screamed and carried on about that. I just don't know if I can wait till Tuesday. I am so upset about this man. And I continue to keep watching him because the more that comes out of his mouth, the more unbelievable it is. I just don't see how somebody like him, con artist and despicable person that he is, can continue to have these people screaming and thinking he's wonderful. They're holding our whole country.
If you want to understand why and how that is, Margie, you have to watch Fox News, which I don't recommend.
Well, yeah,
it's not
good
for your mental health.
I'm back and forth with them.
But Margie, if I can, let me tell you what Trump says the United States is just an idea. He's actually right. The thing that differentiates us from, say, Russia, or us from, say, Sweden, or us from, you know, any other country. I mean, you know, basically, you know, we all have an economy, we all have a currency, we all have a government, we all have manufacturing, we all have consumer economies, we all have churches and religions and all kinds of stuff like that. But what really makes the difference is the idea of how we govern ourselves, the ideals that we hold, the values that we hold. And in the United States, the values that we claim to hold are those that were claimed to be the beacons of the Enlightenment and of the founding of the United States, albeit wildly imperfectly acted out during the first 100 years of our republic and continuing to be not completely acted out today. But still, these are the ideals that we point to. And other countries point to different ideals. You know, hey, we believe in strong men, or we think that security and safety is more important than liberty, or we don't believe that dissenting voices should be allowed to appear on the airwaves, etc. Sadly, Trump apparently gets that, and so what is he doing? He's going after the idea of America. He's trying to change our core understanding of who we are, and we can't let him get away with that. Jeff in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind?
Thank you and your staff for keeping us informed and prepared for these battles at hand. Besides presenting their plans to address all the crises that Congresswoman Jayapal outlined and contrasting those plans versus Trump's catastrophic failures, I think part of Biden and Harris's closing argument should be using Trump's own words against him when he gave away the game, saying the more people vote, the more Republicans will never win. That should be a rallying cry on our side. What do you think about Ralph Nader's idea of a quickly formed bipartisan movement that calls for a grace period of a week or two, allowing all the votes to be counted before declaring a winner?
I think it's a great idea. It's too late to do it now. It's not something that the Republicans would ever support, you know, legislatively. But, you know, I think it's a great idea. Daniel in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Daniel, what's on your mind today?
Just watching Good Morning America 3, and the Secretary of State of Alabama was on there. The anchor asked him, you know, why did the Supreme Court side with you on banning drive-through voting? And he said that, well, drive-through voting is illegal, so therefore, you know, we want to side with anything that's illegal and stop it. But wouldn't that, you know, kind of conflict with Americans with Disabilities Act and their right to vote? What's the legalities behind drive-through voting possibly being illegal? You know, what's he getting
at? Yeah, you know, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. I mean, part of that lawsuit specifically had to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act. What we're seeing here is that the courts have been so politicized by this 40-year effort by Leonard Leo and the billionaires who support him. It has become so seriously politicized, you know, we no longer have justices, at least on the Supreme Court, and at least particularly among the conservative justices, and we no longer have justices who are actually ruling on the merits of the law. They're ruling on what's best for which political party or what comports with whose political ideology. And, you know, this is the result of, you know, the Supreme Court itself kind of brought this on itself back in the early 70s, in 76 and 78, with the Buckley decision and the First National Bank decision, the Bilotti decision. Where they said that, you know, if billionaires want to own politicians or own the political process or even own an entire political party, that's just called free speech. And so the billionaires went from owning politicians to now owning judges. I mean, it was just predictable. And you know, and they own a good chunk of the Supreme Court as well. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, Daniel. We've got a lot of you know, fixing to do here, and hopefully we can get to it. Daniel, thank you for the call. It's a great question. Jesus in McAllen, Texas. Hey, Jesus, what's up?
Hey, greetings from deep South Texas. How have the Republicans and Mitch McConnell been able to appoint so many federal judges? What tactics have they used that perhaps Biden and the Democrats can use?
The strategy that they used was that during the last 4 years of the Obama presidency, McConnell slowed down the approval of federal judges through the court. Actually, throughout the entire 8 years of the Obama presidency, McConnell, to the extent that McConnell could, I guess it would be the last 6 years that McConnell was running the Senate, because Schumer ran it up until the up until the end of the second year of the Obama presidency, but 2010. But in that wave of 2010, the Republicans took the Senate back. And so by slow walking judges, and then during the last 2 years of the Obama presidency, absolutely obstructing all of them, as people were retiring from the federal bench or dying and, you know, these seats were becoming available, McConnell wasn't filling them. It got so bad that about a year before the election of 2016, you know, back in 2015, maybe even late 2014, John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, wrote an open letter to the Senate basically saying, we have a crisis across the federal courts because we have too few judges. And you got to start approving judges. McConnell was like, nope, we're not going to do it. And so when Trump came into office, the day that he came into office, there were, I believe, almost 200 federal judgeships open, certainly more than 100. And that were just sitting there waiting because, Obama had nominated people. For example, Obama had nominated for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Obama had nominated an extraordinarily qualified black woman to be a justice on that court. I'm sorry, I don't recall her name right off the top of my head. But McConnell not only refused to hold a hearing on that judge, but he held that seat open so that Trump could put Amy Coney Barrett in that seat, who up to that point had just been a lawyer and a professor, of right-wing law, and had never tried a case. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett has literally never tried a case as a lawyer. And she's only been a judge for 3 years because McConnell, stole that seat from an Obama appointee and gave it to her. So, I mean, this is how they've been doing it, in a big way, Jesus. And it's a testimonial, I suppose, to Mitch McConnell's patience and persistence and tenacity. And I think the Democrats need to take learn the lesson from that and get some spine of their own, and hopefully they can do that. Thanks a lot for the call, Jesus. Nancy in Springfield. Hey, Nancy, what's up?
You keep talking about having the right to vote, and that is well and good. But then we also, on top of that, need to have the right to have our vote counted, because people who did the provisional ballots that were thrown out, thought they'd voted and had, thought their vote was counted, but it wasn't. I guess in Pennsylvania, you have to use the secrecy envelope to have your vote counted, which I know here in Oregon.
Which is optional here, yeah.
It's optional. It says right on the envelope that it's optional, but, so I think we need to have some way to have our right to vote counted. And I know I read, okay, so what if I mess up on my vote? So I went and read online that here in Oregon, if there's a problem with your vote, they send you a letter and you have 14 days to get back to them, to fix it. And I was just thinking, my brother broke his arm in August, and if he'd broken it, right before the our votes came, he wouldn't have been able to sign his envelope.
Yeah, did you see, Nancy, that in Miami-Dade County, 23% of mail-in ballots are being rejected because people didn't sign the outside of the envelope? This is something that's pretty universal. I believe it's in every state that you have to sign the outside of the envelope because that's how they confirm your signature. That's the equivalent of showing ID. That's your proof that you're you. And I remember when we moved to Oregon back when Louise and I first moved here, 15 years ago, and I voted by mail, and I remember not wanting to sign the back of that envelope. I mean, do I want my signature going through the mail? It seems awful public to me. But I signed it because it said you have to sign it. But I thought, why? Now I understand exactly why. I mean, that's, it's the equivalent of signing and registering, when you go to vote. But a right to have your vote counted, and Nancy, thank you for the call. A right to have your vote counted would be implicit in a right to vote. Obviously, having the right to cast your vote is part of a right to vote, but having your vote counted as well. So that's why I think that we need, at the very least, a law that explicitly says that, although I think the Motor Voter Act does. But even better would be an explicit constitutional amendment that says that, we have a right to vote and it shall not be removed, taken away from us. Chuck in Ukiah, California. Hey, Chuck, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, what is the exact definition of the words narcissist and the word grifter?
A narcissist is a person who essentially is in love with themselves. It's based on Narcissus, I believe he was a Greek character who was so in love with his own reflection in the pond, he kept staring at it and trying to kiss it, that he eventually fell in and drowned, as I recall, if I'm remembering the story right. So a narcissist is a person who loves themselves. And a grifter is a person who makes their living by conning people.
How can a judge in Michigan, you know, overturn a ban allowing people to openly carry weapons into a polling place? How is that possible? It's illegal. It's insane. How is that possible?
This goes back to the Heller decision, where Scalia, desperate to come up with a defend your home argument for owning weapons, you know, to redefine the Second Amendment, because there was no discussion back, or very little discussion back in the day, about defending your home with your gun. And so he went back and he found this document from an anti-federalist in opposition of Pennsylvania ratifying the convention. It was from 1787 or 88, and it was or maybe even 89. And it was, you know, one of the anti-federalists talking about, you know, guns to protect their home. And he used that as the cornerstone, or as a piece of justifying the Heller decision, saying that, you know, because I was able to find this thing, that means that, you know, we should legalize gun ownership. So what they did is they created this right, the right to own a gun. And as I was talking with Pramil Jayapal day before yesterday, because the United States Supreme Court has ruled that, Chuck, you and I have a right to own a gun, we can walk into a gun store and say, I'll take that one right there. And the gun store owner cannot say, you know, I don't like the way you look, or I don't like all your facial hair, or, you know, I think there's something suspicious about you. It looks like you haven't changed your clothes in 6 months, or you know, anything. You know, they cannot deny us that gun. And if they do, we can sue them and take them to court and punish them for denying us the right to have a gun. On voting, it's the exact opposite. If, you know, if the state wants to take away my vote, they just do it. Just like, you know, the state can't take away my gun without going to court, they can take away my vote. And so what this court decision is saying is basically, you have a right to a gun. And if you have a right to a gun and you can carry that gun anywhere, that would include polling places. That's the logical extension. We also should have a right to vote. Frankly, I don't think that we should have a right to own a gun. I don't see that in the Constitution, but that's just, you know, separate argument. But if we had a right to vote, then when Brian Kemp or Greg Abbott or, you know, Mike DeWine or any of these Republican governors want to throw a couple hundred thousand of us off the voting rolls, they would have to go to court on each single one of those cases and prove that we're not legitimately on the voting rolls. And that, I think, is the you know, where we really should be focusing our attention, is passing the 28th Amendment to say that every citizen who has achieved the age of majority, every citizen who's 18 years of age or over in the United States, has an absolute federally protected right to vote. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom in Marquette, Michigan. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
I'm calling for guidance for people who go to a polling place where we're required to wear a mask, and on the mask is some candidate's name. What can we do as an individual in that case? And is it legal to photograph them?
Yeah, that will vary from state to state. Election laws are almost entirely state laws across the United States, you know, a remnant of our federalism. Well, really, a remnant of the southern states wanting to be able to control, you know, who could vote based on the color of their skin at the founding of the republic. But that said, I doubt that somebody in your polling place wearing a mask that says Trump on it is going to change anyone's vote, or saying Biden on it, for that matter. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. In that case, then, rather than picking a fight, or rather than going to the elections officials and saying, I want to complain, or rather than even wasting your time with it, I would just ignore it.
Okay, but
it's a whole different thing if you've got somebody outside passing out literature, or, you know, I mean, you know, doing electioneering. But if somebody's got a Trump mask on, you know, yeah, technically it's illegal, but it's not worth the fight. And it's not going to change anybody's vote. It's just, you know, they're just there to own the libs. So don't get owned. Just, you know, laugh at them.
I understand, but what I'm going to ask next is, given that your vote is supposed to be private, is it okay to film outside of the polling place or inside it with your camera?
That will depend on the state that you're in, and I don't know the laws in the state of Michigan. Some states, you know, make it illegal to take pictures inside. Other states don't. Some states have, you know, different limits on the outside, you know, how many feet away you have to be, what defines electioneering, and all those kind of things. So for that, the answer to that question, Tom, either call your local board of elections, although they may be kind of swamped right now, or call your local Democratic Party, and they should be able to direct you to somebody who knows the answer to that question.
Okay.
So thanks for the call, Tom. I got to run. Samuel in Santa Ana. Hey, Samuel, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm a shareholder in KPFK, one share of stock.
Good on you.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Go KPFK. You're familiar. This is very important. You're familiar with Rock the Vote?
Rock the Vote, V-O-T-E, right.
Right, okay. They're famous. They're like, okay, if you're familiar with them, then I'm going to go on. I figured out a way that we can get the election on Election Day along with all the COVID disgruntled Republicans. And on Rock the Vote, they actually tell the different IDs that are necessary for each state for anybody who's confused. And it's if you go to rockthevote.org, how to vote, and then go to nationwide voting info, and then go to voter ID laws, they list whatever's necessary in your state. It's comprehensive. And the thing that I'm pushing myself, of course, is, and you and I spoke about this one time before, was about passports, and I found out since in our previous conversation that 42% of the population just happens to own a passport. So
no, it's nowhere near that high, Samuel. It's more like 4 or 5% of the U.S. population.
No, I actually read this was in I think Forbes, and there were a number of things on it. It's gone up a lot because people now have to have them to go to Mexico and Canada.
Oh, interesting. So, okay, yeah, my numbers are probably a decade old. You may be right. I don't. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really a big deal now. And I was telling the gentleman that's on Wednesdays about it, and he thought it would be like a poll tax because, you know, so few people would have it. And then when I did the research, right, I found three credible sources that said it. So anyway, if we go to rockthevote.org, go to how to vote, and nationwide voting info and voting ID laws, we can do that. We're going to have all these disgruntled COVID Republican people. I honestly believe, Tom, I'm not just blowing smoke up your pants. I honestly believe that on the night of the election or the next day that this thing is going to be called.
I think you're right, Samuel. And in my most optimistic moments, I think it's going to be an absolute blowout, a wipeout. Democrats are going to seize elected offices all across the United States in all kinds of ways, and it'll be just a wonderful thing. Now, that said, I'm taking nothing for granted. You know, we've got, we got a Supreme Court that is making it harder for us to vote. We've got Republicans filing lawsuits in state after state after state. We've got all kinds of wacky rules, like in Texas, only, you know, one drop box for 4 million people in Harris County because of Greg Abbott, your cranky governor. I mean, it's just I'm taking nothing for granted, but I am very hopeful that you have nailed it and that we've got some really good stuff coming. Samuel, thanks for the call. Ed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
We've been watching all the polls on the news, you know, showing that Biden has a lead, you know, in some states more than others. My fear is that, you know, people who live in the states where, you know, Biden is leading, they're going to get complacent with that lead and not show up to vote. I think not only does Trump need to lose, he needs to lose by as many votes as possible. So, you know, I just want to get the message out that, you know, if you're in a state where Biden's going to win, vote anyway, because we need to kick Trump's ass into the ground as far as we can and, you know, make a statement just by not only making him lose, but lose by the biggest margin in the history.
Absolutely. His ass metaphorically. But yes, I am totally with you. And, you know, if you have not voted, get out there and vote. It's too late to mail in your ballot. If you've got a mail-in ballot, take it with you. And, you know, again, rules change, vary from state to state, but take it with you. Somebody mentioned a passport earlier. Passports don't have your address on them. So be sure if you're going to bring a passport as proof of your citizenship that you bring other ID that has an address on it. And check your state laws. In fact, when Louise and I moved to Washington, D.C., I literally had to go home twice and come back with more ID to vote the first time we lived in Washington, D.C. First, they said, you don't have a Social Security card. So I went home and got that. And then I came back and they went, you don't have a utility bill. So I went home and got that. And came. Don't make my mistake. Get prepared. Kurt in Chicago. Hey, Kurt, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Tom, I've been listening for about 4 years now. And as you say, democracy is not a spectator sport. I have to thank you. You have inspired me to get off my keister. I am going to be an election judge on Tuesday. I want to make sure.
Hey, good on you, Kurt.
Thank you. Thank you. I owe it to you, brother, man. Give yourself a cheer.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
I want to make sure everyone that can vote gets to vote.
Yeah. So, Kurt, just as a public service here, very briefly, tell people how you did that and how they can do it.
Well, I went online to the Cook County Board of Elections, and I just had to put in my name, my address, was I registered to vote, my telephone number, and I signed up relatively late in the game, and I had a response within 2 weeks, and it was that simple. They do check, make sure you're eligible to vote, and from there you become a judge. There's a about a four-hour training class that this year was done online. Real simple. You watch videos, answer questions. You have to score 80% on the questions. And from there, I was good to go.
That is great. That is great. Kurt, thank you so much for the call and for the encouragement and for being a great role model and example to everybody else who's listening. Good on you. Dylan in Mule Shoe, Texas. Hey, Dylan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I listen to your show every day at work. But today I took off work because I'm going to vote for the last day of early voting.
Hey, good on you.
Texas. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I voted every single election, of course, but this one obviously is a big one. And I'm over here in the Red Sea. There's nothing but Trump flags, Trump signs. It's bleeding red over here, and it's just horrible. I would be surprised if any of these counties go blue up in the panhandle of Texas. But I grew up in Austin, Texas, so that's where I get my blue blood from. You know, it's like night and day, but I see a lot of diversity in this country for sure, going from the city to the country. And I heard you talk about this a couple months ago, Tom, and I really thought about it. I respect it, and it might come down to, I think it might be a good idea that every single state, if Trump happens to win again, I think Biden's going to win for sure, popular vote, but if Trump ends up winning by cheating, which he is, obviously, it might have to come down to every single state just being its own country, and we get all the people in Texas that vote Trump and all those people, just put them in their southern corner of this, you know, the country, Alabama, Tennessee, Louisiana, all those states. They can be their own countries, and then we can have the West Coast, and we can have the Northeast, and we can have the countries just by state. And then people might be able to see by then that, you know, you can only progress if we keep on moving forward, not keep on dragging us backward, because we're dragging along the smart people are dragging along the Kentuckys that are not paying their taxes fully, all these small little states that we're giving them, that we just keep on feeding them, and they don't want to move. Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
I think,
them.
Though, Dylan, it would be so sad, it would be so unfortunate if our country was torn apart because these right-wing billionaires for the last 50 years have been funding this program to basically tear us apart, to cause us to hate each other, to purely to increase their own wealth and power. And if they were to succeed
true.
In that, I would be seriously bummed out. But Dylan, good on you for voting, and thank you for the call.
Look at Europe, Tom. All those countries are progressing, and they united together, European Union. If we do it united, the United States, but every single country, then you can give the anti-federalists. You can give the anti-federalists.
Well, we're seeing a certain amount of that right now, Dylan. I mean, you've got states that are going their own way on everything from abortion to food stamps to Medicare, or Medicaid, rather. You know, compare Louisiana to California. I think that, it's fairly apparent. Richard, thank you for the call. Alejandro in Miami, Florida. Hey, Alejandro, what's up?
Hello, Tom Harmon. I just wanted to let you know that I heard your story today about the 22% of Miami-Dade ballots weren't counted by the city because they didn't sign the envelope. And that's, very true. I mean, mine was counted last week. I sent it in 2 Saturdays ago, and it was counted last week Wednesday. At least by Thursday, I saw it was counted. And I definitely had to sign it in the back.
Great.
And I do share your concern about the whole public information thing, because on the envelope, in order to contact you, they told you, oh, they tell you write your contact information, your name, your phone number, like your cell phone or home number, and an email address. And of course, I was reluctant to do that only because anyone could see that information, and of course my privacy concerns. But of course, then I'm worried about if I don't put it, then they're not going to contact me back. So obviously that's something to consider.
Yeah. And Alejandro, let's we all need to take a chill pill here. That's an old expression from the 80s. Sorry about that. But anyway, we all need to relax a little about this. I mean, the fact, and as I said, I was nervous about signing my envelope the first time I did it. But you have to do that. But, then I thought, now I'm looking at this and thinking the only people who are going to see that, my signature or my email address or my, actually here in Oregon, they print your address on the outside in addition to your signature so that they can look it up, see who you are, make sure that you're registered to vote. Your phone number's not there. Your email address, but your address is there. But who's going to see that? It's going to be my mail carrier, who already knows my address and knows who I am and knows a lot more intimate details than that, because they know everything I get in the mail. And and whoever receives it on the other end, who's counting the votes, the state Secretary of State people, and they don't care. They've already got that information, too. And in between, it's going through sorting machines and stuff. And I don't think anybody's going to pull it out and write it down or anything like that. So I'm really not worried about that. But but I get what you're saying. And I think the important message is, and obviously it's too late to mail any. And Alejandro, thank you for the call. It's too late to mail anything in right now. So you've got to deliver it in person. But in most states, even when you deliver it in person, if you're taking an absentee ballot, you have to sign the outside of the envelope. So don't forget. Will in Ely, Minnesota. Hey, Will, what's up?
Trump has never committed to graciously leaving the White House or even ungraciously leaving it. He's never committed to accepting the results of the election. My question is, what happens if the day comes when Biden is unquestionably declared the winner and Trump still declines to accept it and refuses to leave the White House?
Noon on January 20th. His nuclear codes will become inactive. His access to people and information will stop. I would be surprised if he has to be physically removed. I think a much more likely scenario, Will, is that he's going to refuse to acknowledge the defeat. And there's precedent for that. Stacey Abrams has never acknowledged being defeated in Georgia because she believes, and I think rightly so, Brian Kemp stole the election. He was Secretary of State and refused to put people on the voting rolls and purge people from the voting rolls. So, I think Trump will probably say, I'm not going to acknowledge this. I'm not going to concede. I'm not going to give a concession speech. And I don't think he's going to show up for the inauguration of Joe Biden. I'm also thinking that there's probably a fairly high possibility that he's just going to say, okay, that's it, and leave the White House, in November or maybe December, and just, move back to New York City or move to Florida or whatever, continue being president. I continue to think that he may make Mike Pence president for like the last week of his presidency so that Pence can do the ceremonial stuff and Pence can pardon, the entire Trump crime family. And then he's going to go on to his next money-making scheme, because that's all he ever does is, that's his metric for everything is how do you make money off this? And I think, frankly, he's going to either buy one of the marginal right-wing television networks or try to create his own. But he's got he's got this huge list of rubes. I had four emails from the Trump campaign asking for money this morning in the first 5 hours of the day, between 5 a.m. and 10 a.m. this morning when I got up at 5, until about 2 hours ago. I got five emails from the Trump campaign asking for money. That money is not going to pay for ads. That money is going into the pockets of Donald Trump. I would bet anything. So, Will, I think that's what he's got to figure out. He's got all these names. How can he squeeze more cash out of them?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I think in his mind, the answer is to basically get all those people to pay him $50 a year or $100 a year to subscribe to an online television network. We'll see.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And welcome back. Norman in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Norman, what's up?
I'm concerned that right after the election, we will maybe start seeing tons of people moving away from where they are, especially in big areas like L.A. and New York where there are high costs, and that this will devalue properties that much more and devalue rent. And maybe we can persuade the banks, et cetera, that it's in their interest to make sure that whether it's a Republican or a Democrat to pass these bills for $2,000 now, universal basic income and the PUA, you know, CARES Act, so that before the end of the year, so that people maybe can get money back and not feel like they have to make these kind of moves quickly, right? And I think it's going to happen because people won't have the incentive to stay here after the election when they don't have to worry about voting anymore.
Yeah. In response to the last caller, I was kind of pontificating or prognosticating, I guess, seeing the future of what Trump might do. I think another dimension of that, Norman, is that Donald Trump is a destroyer. He calls himself a builder, and yeah, he builds buildings, but he's also a destroyer. He loves destroying things, particularly things that he hates or he's angry with. Mm-hmm. And if he loses this election, when he loses this election, God willing, he's going to be seriously pissed off. And he's going to want to do the old biblical thing of, you know, you don't just conquer a people, but after you do, you pour salt into their soil so that their crops won't grow. He's going to do everything he can to destroy this country, I believe. And part of that is going to be to refuse to allow any sort of support to go to average Americans who just voted him out of office. You know, any kind of coronavirus support or subsidy or anything like that. He's just going to fight it. You know, I don't know. And whether the Republicans in the Senate will go along with him is going to be the big question.
Yeah, you know, my sister is even leaving, you know, L.A. to go to, you know, to Central, you know, station. She says a lot of people are leaving L.A. right now. And I think it's just going to pick up even heavier right after the election. And like I said, I think the banks, you know, bank people and, you know, other property owners and real estate agencies, they probably should realize that, you know, their value of their property depends upon, you know, basically making sure people get money in their hands again to make sure that rents don't go down, because it's just going to get worse for them too.
The way that the Trump administration has softened the lobbying and public pressure from the banking sector with regard to things like, you know, because the bank, as you correctly point out, the banksters know they're not going to get their credit cards paid. They're not going to get their mortgages paid. They're not going to get their money back on their you know, home equity loans. They're not going to get anything if people don't have the money to pay them. And therefore, giving people a stimulus is an indirect way of supporting the banksters. But, you know, what Trump has done and the Fed is doing is just pouring money into the banksters. I mean, they're, you know, these you know, the Fed in particular, Offering banks zero interest, functionally zero interest loans, ad infinitum. And now buying stock, I mean, they're actually buying stock in banks. I mean, you know, it's buying bonds from banks. They may well be buying the stocks from the banks. I've never seen an actual list of the companies that they're buying stock from, but I understand almost all of them are publicly traded. They've finessed the politics of it, but I don't know how long they can hold it together. I mean, we'll see. But I suspect that after the election, when there's a clear winner, if that clear winner is the Democrat, God willing, we're going to see a lot of change in America. A lot of change. Max in Clackamas, Oregon. Hey, Max, what's up?
Mail in ballot. I had some trouble with mine. I filled it out, placed it in the outgoing mail in my mailbox. Several hours later, my neighbor actually came up and handed my ballot back to me. She had gotten it delivered in the mail to her house.
Oh,
I don't think it was anything nefarious. Just an accident. And with so much outgoing political mail and all the flyers that are going out these days, it just messes in the bag. But my point is, please make sure if you do vote by mail, double check with your county. I know Multnomah County has an online voter or vote acceptance text that they can send you saying that they got your ballot. So just double check. The mail people are surely overwhelmed right now, but every vote counts. And it's, find a way to vote one way or another. We have to.
I'm with you, Max. And when you get it's a little late now for Oregon, but, for future reference, when you get your ballot, there's actually a little a printout in there that tells you how to sign up to get those alerts that your ballot has been received in county, or if there's a problem with it that you can fix. Max, thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks for watching us on YouTube. Pete in Dunbury, Wisconsin. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and it's gerrymandering.
Okay, go for it.
Wisconsin is the most gerrymandered state in the country. And
really?
If anyone has trouble believing the real effects of it, go to the website wetheirrelevant.com.
Okay.
This group files freedom of information requests with every member of the Wisconsin legislature on totals of people calling in to either support or oppose pending legislation. A couple years ago during the lame duck session when they stripped the governor of a bunch of his abilities and the attorney general because they were both now going to be Democrats. The calls were 97% opposed.
Right.
But they did it anyway because they are in such safe gerrymandered districts, it doesn't matter.
And because the Koch network told them to do it. I mean, Wisconsin was the big test site for Charles Koch and his buddies. And, pouring money into one particular Midwestern state to see if they could turn it from reliably Democratic, one of the most progressive states in the country, to reliably Republican. And, it worked for a while. We'll see if it sticks.
We've got the Democratic governor, and every time he tries to do something to deal with the COVID problem, Voss and Fitzgerald, the Senate and Assembly leaders, just refuse to go along, and they take them to court when all they had to do was gavel into session to overturn it, but they'd rather have somebody else take them to court so it can't be that they did it, but they refuse to come into session to even discuss things that the state of Wisconsin can do to help us.
Pete,
because they're
do you know matter. What percentage of your House and Senate are up for re-election? Is it all of them? Is it typically the House is up for re-election every 2 years, and the Senate is either 4 or 6 years in most states.
Yes.
But I don't know how it's done in Wisconsin. What is the deal there?
I do not know. Unfortunately.
Okay.
I know
voter turnout is huge. So hopefully, the current partisan nature of those bodies will change. Forgive me. Finish your thought.
Doubtful because of the gerrymandering, and the Governor Evers has appointed a citizens redistricting committee that is comprised of, there are no members of the legislature, there are no lobbyists, There are no elected officials. There are no members of any political parties. And they are citizens appointed by the governor, and they are holding meetings in every county to gather input on what they would like to see for the next redistricting. And, of course, Voss and Fitzgerald are claiming that is a naked partisan power grab.
It's called grabbing back.
Even though in 2010, the redistricting was done by a law firm with zero Democratic members' input, and the only Republican members who could see what was going on had to swear an oath of secrecy that they wouldn't discuss it until after it was released. But that's not a naked partisan power grab. No. Just having the citizens input.
These guys, I think in order to run for Republican political office in Wisconsin or anywhere in the country, actually, your middle name has to be Hypocrisy. I'm with you. Pete, thanks for the call. Andy, from Wisconsin to Wisconsin, you're in River Falls, Wisconsin. What's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good.
I was wondering why they don't have an IQ test for, you know, the president for, you know, before you can run.
Well, that's the point of elections.
Go ahead.
I said that's the point of elections. I mean, you know, when Georgians, for example, saw John Ossoff just peel the bark off David Perdue a couple days ago, you know, I think they got it. You know, Ossoff's pretty bright. Perdue's kind of dumber than a stump.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, I know. But it just seems like, you know, you have to take tests to be, you know, a pilot. You have to, you know, all these different things. Right. You know, but all it takes to be president is just a big chunk of money, you know?
Yeah. I'm real reluctant to have any government or any agency say we're going to put a barrier before somebody can become elected to political office. Because that then creates a system that can be manipulated. The one variable, the one where I may waver on that is security clearances. I'm of the opinion that if a president can't get a security clearance, they probably shouldn't be in the race. But again, I don't think that should be a federal requirement. I think the political parties, the Democratic and Republican parties, should make these absolute requirements that prior to handing their nomination for president to any candidate, that person has to demonstrate that they can pass an FBI security check. Andy, thanks for the call. Because we got a guy in the White House right now who there's no way he could have passed a security check. And he's been passing our secrets on to other people for 4 years now. Marie in Atlanta. Hey, Marie, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My subject today is voter suppression. You had an earlier caller who was asking about being able to record audio or video or take pictures in a polling place. And you responded that that depends upon state law. In Georgia, it is illegal to audio or video record. And the way that they do it is the signs are positioned just outside the polling place. And it actually works to assist in voter suppression, because if you go to the counter, right, you walk into the polling place and you go to the counter to check in, that person, and I've had it happen to me, can engage in all kinds of bad behavior. I had one who was basically trying to bully me, and I have no proof of it. I have absolutely, there was,
you couldn't videotape.
I didn't have somebody, I couldn't videotape it, and now whenever I go to vote, I take a witness to stand right next to me, because otherwise I have no proof.
Wow.
And this is one of those under-recognized threats.
Yeah, and that is absolutely brilliant, Marie, and probably because I'm, you know, your plain vanilla white guy who's never had a problem voting, that hadn't occurred to me, but that's got to be a problem for people of color all across this country, that they're encountering people who don't want them to vote. Yeah. Okay. Well, therefore, so you would think of it immediately. By the way, that same caller had, you know, was from Wisconsin, and I had asked what's the deal with the Wisconsin legislature. And during the break, somebody had sent me a note saying that it's the state assembly and the Senate, and there are 99 mm-hmm. members to the Wisconsin Assembly, 33 members to the Senate. The assembly is up for election every 2 years. The Senate is up for 4-year terms, and there are 16 of them up this year. But it's so heavily gerrymandered that in 2018, 53% of all the Wisconsin voters voted for Democrats for the state assembly. But despite that, mm-hmm. the Republicans sent 63 out of 99 seats to Washington, D.C., which is mind-boggling. Marie, thank you. Thank you for educating me. Thank you for that's a really important point. And we should make it legal to bring a camera into a polling place. Thank you. I'm going to start pushing for that. I really appreciate that insight. Thank you, Marie. Hassan in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Hassan, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, I'm calling about a caller who called a little while ago and asked about how the Supreme Court can step into a state's election and stop the count. And you said that you didn't see any real constitutional theory that they could do that. And I read the Wisconsin case, and I don't necessarily agree with the theory, but there is a constitutional theory that the court did this on. And I want people to understand that just so that they get how we need to fight back on this. The Constitution, under Article 2, Section 1, says that each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors. And that's the key language, in a manner as the legislature thereof may direct. In Wisconsin, the state law was that votes had to be counted by the date of the election, or had to be received by the date of the election. So the theory was that it was a federal court earlier this year that had extended that deadline, not the legislature. And therefore, right. says Kavanaugh, and agreed to by the rest of the Republican-appointed court, that's invalid. By the way, that also...
Yeah, I read that in the decision. Kavanaugh said this should be the province of the state legislature, and the federal court should not be legislating from the bench, essentially.
Right, but my point is that it's the constitutional theory here is that it says so in Article 2, Section 1. And by the way, right. under federal law, it has to be done by the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, November 3rd this year, coming up in just a couple of days. This could backfire on the Republicans if the court actually uses federal law as it's written, because Section 5 of Title 3 says that they cannot change the law after the date set for the choosing of electors. So Florida, for instance, shouldn't be able to then come in with their legislature, change the law like they tried to in 2000, right. and say, we have a new way of choosing electors.
Right, way, I'm with you. And that theory that Kavanaugh laid out, by the way, in the Wisconsin case, is literally the exact opposite of what the court did in 2000 in Bush v. Gore.
Exactly. And in fact, he cites Bush v. Gore and again turns it around. And just a quick little warning to Minnesota voters, this is where I live. The Eighth Circuit followed that decision, the Wisconsin decision, just yesterday, and threw out our 7-day extension of the time to count. So if you're in Minnesota and you mailed your vote in too late, please check it. Please check it. And if it has not been received, get yourself down there and turn it in person.
Right, or if it's in the mail, go down and, assuming you can do this in Minnesota, again, it varies from state to state.
You can.
But in many states, you can go in and you can cancel it, can't you?
You can. Well, you can't cancel it if it's been received, but if they have not received it, you can vote.
Right, and you vote, and then when they get it, they will not count that particular ballot.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. Yeah. So check it, make sure you get down there, do it today. Don't wait.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you. Stephanie in Hopkin Park, Illinois. Hey, Stephanie, what's up?
Okay, this law and order president we got, is people being told to defy the law? Down here, you know, the governor has been shutting down certain places, including Kankakee County, where I live in. You know, the bars and restaurants can't have indoor, you know, service anymore. Mm-hmm. We're having restaurants saying that they don't believe the governor. They want specific data proving that restaurants and bars and gyms are causing more problems, and they're refusing to shut down. The state is, the state police have been going to different restaurants trying to shut, you know, making these people shut down. And this is coming because the president is telling them, don't believe science, don't believe your governor. If he's, you know, if he's Democratic, he's probably, you know, got issues you shouldn't listen to.
And yeah, the Republican conspiracy theory is that Democrats want to shut down the economy to hurt Donald Trump.
Yes, and see, the thing that's getting me is, I don't know how many of your other viewers are feeling this way. I'm almost, it's like I have a bipolar political situation going on here. On one hand, I'm feeling very hopeful because, you know, the voting, even in some of the towns in Illinois, they never had lines. People are standing in line sometimes an hour just to get out there and vote. Not because we don't have enough, it's because the number of people that are voting has, like, tripled, and which makes me feel really good. And a lot of young people. On the other hand, I'm feeling really dreadful as to, are we going to have a decent transition? What kind of a team is going to be called? So it's like, you know, I'm up at night wondering, even if we win, what's going to happen to us?
Yeah, and nobody knows, Stephanie, but you raise all the right questions. And, you know, let's not freak out. Let's just, you know, get through this calm and steady. I think our republic is going to be safe. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Sam in Watertown, Wisconsin. Hey, Sam, what's up?
Was it Haseem earlier talking about Wisconsin and our voting issues?
Mm-hmm.
He is correct. The problem is that our very gerrymandered, lazy Wisconsin GOP legislature that hasn't met in 7 months hasn't done anything to change our Constitution, which requires our ballots to be received by Election Day. And in April for the primary,
like
the federal judge expanded it. Right, exactly.
Right.
And so the issue was the federal judge allowed the extra 6 days for our ballots to be received. But because our legislature hasn't met in, I believe it's 7 months now to do anything, the Supreme Court basically had to go back to what our legislature.
They didn't have to, Sam. I mean, there's dueling judicial theories or legal theories here. The rationale that a federal court used to extend the time that, as long as the ballots were postmarked before voting day, before November 3rd, that they could still be counted after November 3rd. It was the pandemic and public health laws that create exceptions to all kinds of things around national emergencies and crises are well established in American law, in common law, going all the way back to, you know, 400, literally 200 years before the founding of our republic, going back 400 years on this continent. And go back, you know, in British common law back to the 10th century. So,
exactly.
You know, they had a solid legal basis. And then the Supreme Court comes along and says, you know, and Brett Kavanaugh, and by the way, the liberals on the court agreed with what I just laid out and with the federal court that had extended your time. But Kavanaugh and the conservatives came forward and said, no, this is a legislative process that the state should be doing. You know, and those are both legitimate positions.
And the question is, which is more important? Is it more important to accommodate people during a time of emergency, or is it more important to respect the integrity of a state legislature versus encroachment by the federal government? And that's a coin toss at a certain level.
And the issue is that our legislature, because they haven't met, they've actually been taking our governor to court to fight anything he's tried to do to help with the pandemic. It's ridiculous.
Right. He being Democratic Governor Evers, though you have a Republican-controlled legislature, even though the majority, 46% of 53% of Wisconsin voters voted for Democrats, but you've got 63% of your congressional delegation House of Representatives is held by Republicans, which is and 36 out of 60 in the Senate. And this is, as pointed out, and I'm sure you would agree, this is because of gerrymandering and essential cancer that's got to be in there. So
exactly. I agree with him.
Yeah. Do you see this resolving? Do you think there's a good chance that even with the gerrymandering that the Democrats can win a majority in either body in the Wisconsin legislature?
Well, I'm hoping we can. I'm in one of those districts where we are so gerrymandered that I don't know that if we'll ever get anything other than a GOP candidate in here, but we keep trying.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Sam, thank you. Thanks for the call. It's a fascinating time we're in. It's an absolutely fascinating time. What a gift to be alive through all this. We'll be right back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Richard in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Before the big day aboard our SS Trumpistania here, hopefully not sailing into oblivion.
Indeed.
For some reason, I was filled with some intense dread yesterday, thinking through the scenario that might happen, if these people remain in the power that they have. They've never been in it to be able to win the popular vote or win the elections, in my opinion. They've only been in it to be able to work it through the machinery that they have, through the chicanery, through the double dealing and cheating. And if they actually succeed in retaining, I worry about a three-pronged, three-pointed... I worry about these guys controlling the census for an ultimate gerrymander of districts across the country, number one. I worry about them going and deciding to pack the court with their own four or six judges. Nothing to say they couldn't try to go ahead and do that, too. And number three, the 34th state to be able to rewrite the Constitution. I think that they feel that they're probably never going to be closer to ultimate power as they are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me. Pardon me. But they won't be able to do it now. The convention of states thing. pardon me, Richard. They are not going to be able to pull this thing off over the very, very near future. What we have to be concerned about is the longer term. Pardon me, the longer future.
That's right.
And just inhaled a little bit of coffee. My apologies. And it's not COVID.
That wasn't my fault. And, not my fault.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
I've been choking though, too.
Yeah, I think you're right on all those points. And I would not despair, though. I mean, these are the reasons why we need to get active and remain active and and do absolutely everything we can. I'm totally with you. Richard, thank you for the call. Chris in Portland. Hey, Chris, what's up?
What if, say, Republicans lose, the Senate and the House and the presidency, but in this small period where they're all dead meat, basically, if they try to cram through a whole bunch of crazy things, knowing that they got nothing to lose because they already lost?
They won't. If you're talking about through the federal legislature, they won't be able to cram through anything because we control the House. And you can't do, all legislation has to originate in the House, or at least all legislation that has to do with spending or appropriations or taxing.
Okay.
So I think we've got a firewall right now, Chris. I would be far more worried if the Republicans, had seized the House in the last election, but they didn't, thank God. And now it's just up to us to take the Senate back. And it sure does look to me like the trend lines are moving in that direction. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. Just in general, we all need to just relax a little bit. I realize, you know, it's a kind of a tough time and a tense time, and nobody's really sure what's going to happen, and, you know, what do we do, and how do we do it, and where do we go, and all these things. But let's just take these things step by step. And, you know, step one, make sure everyone you know is voting, and voting without using the mail. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for listening to KTNF. What's up?
I'm still a little nervous about this election. I'll tell you why. Because we all, especially as Black Americans, we all need to look back and read up on the compromise of 1877. That was a compromise where, of course, Rutherford B. Hayes, he won the presidency through the Electoral College because he was down by 20 electoral votes. The Florida, Louisiana, I think it was South Carolina, they pushed him over the edge with the majority. Yep, exactly, with the majority from the Supreme Court. But the Congress made a compromise. And this is a mirroring what we're doing now. So if Trump wins, there'll be a great compromise. And if the Democrats don't get on board and say, this is our compromise, we want to get rid of Mitch McConnell, we want to get rid of all the judges that he appointed, that would be the compromise. Because, first of all, it's like you just said in your last segment, he's not going to give up, he's not going to leave office, and the Democrats being, he knows the Democrats are being wishy-washy, and they will always capitulate. So he knows he'll stay in the office, and the Democrats won't do anything about it. And that's where we're going to have a compromise. We need to be prepared for Joe Biden to lose and to have a big compromise that will hurt them.
Yeah, I suspect, Lawrence, I absolutely get what you're saying. You're so right about, you know, the compromise of 1877 that, you know, stabbed in the back African Americans and the whole idea of Reconstruction. You're absolutely right on that. I'm more inclined, rather than to compromise, to just go to war, to go to battle, political battle with these guys. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. Lawrence, thanks for the call. Very thoughtful call. Be good to yourself and the people around you. You know, everybody's on edge right now. Everybody's kind of strung out. Take some relaxing time and share some good words with other people. Tag You're It. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.